Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Democratic Unionist Party MLAs and MPs are this morning preparing to cast their ballots in the first leadership contest in the party's 50-year history following the resignation of Arlene Foster last month. Stormont Agriculture Minister Edwin Poots and Lagan Valley MP Geoffrey Donaldson are both vying for the position. A result is expected to be announced later today, and I'm joined on the line by former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern. Good morning to you, Bertie.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you very much for joining us. You're backing Geoffrey Donaldson, are you?
I think he probably has an edge. I'm not backing him. That might do him no good. I know Geoffrey from since the 80s. We used to participate. In those times, it was the McGimpsey brothers and Geoffrey were about the only unionists that used to come to the university debates that I regularly participated in. And Geoffrey and I shared a platform from totally different perspectives and usually ended up arguing for most of the night. But I found him always some I could talk to him, I could deal with him. But I think the interesting thing is, I mean, Edwin Poots obviously organised the coup. He thought he had the numbers. I think his backers probably tried to get a unanimous position for him. But Geoffrey, you know, Geoffrey has been around a long time. He's been in politics since the mid-80s. And, you know, they're not, I know there's been an effort to portray them maybe as different figures in the media over the last few weeks since Arlene was forced out. But, you know, they have similar views on a lot of things. I mean, there's only a few years between them. Geoffrey is 58, I think Edwin is 56. And, you know, the two of them are steeped in unionism politics. The Edwin's father was Charlie. He was one of Ian Paisley's right-hand men, I think probably his most right-hand men. He was involved in the Protestant Unionist Party before 1971, as you said, when the DUP was founded. So with the Paisleys, a long tradition with unionism. And Geoffrey, back in the 80s, when his cousins were killed by the Provisional IRA, he joined the UUP, the UDR, and the Orange Order. And, you know, he in the times that I knew Geoffrey, obviously we were on kind of opposite sides. I was working with David Trimble to try to get the Good Friday Agreement through, and I was fairly shocked that day when he walked out. He literally walked out on the last night just after we got the deal with the SDLP and the UUP. Mm. And that almost upended David on that day.
So are you saying then that those who are saying that Geoffrey Donaldson might be easier to deal with when it comes to the Irish government, and even if you're looking across at the British government, to be wary, because essentially they're both going to take a tough line on the Northern Ireland Protocol should it come down to it?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I think the I have an issue with the analysis. I mean, both of them, I think the issues that are out in front of us, the protocol, and what's going to happen with that, and their perception that both of them have, that it changes the constitutional position of Northern Ireland, which I totally oppose. I don't accept that for a second, but that's their position. How the institutions will run over the next year, I think both of them have been supportive of the institutions generally. Edmund was actually put in a lot of work to get the institutions back up. He supported the Irish language bill. He even argued with some of his colleagues that, you know, Bill na Gaeilge should go through. That's back in at the beginning of last year when we were trying to get the institutions back up and running. And I mean, both of them have said in their kind of manifestos that they will run pro-union campaigns. Geoffrey's stronger. Geoffrey has set out a very strong analysis how he will try to bring Northern Society together to prove that the pro-union campaign is the right thing to do. That's a little bit like what happened in Scotland before the referendum. So, you know, there's not big differences in, in these issues.
Can I ask you, though, about their strategy in the run-up to this election, this unprecedented election for leader within the DUP? Because they decided not to do any interviews, not to set out their stall. Yet we had Geoffrey Donaldson's campaign reportedly briefing Stephen Nolan's team at the BBC, saying that if he wins, we may cut off all North-South cooperation. I mean, the strategy for first of all, not to set out their stall. What do you make of that?
Well, I suppose they've never had a vote, and I think it's so different to the UUP. The Ulster Unionists are having a leadership campaign, and they're going to, you know, do town hall meetings and put out the policies. Interesting that the big switch that was made in the last 24 hours, I couldn't understand how both of them wanted to be leader of their party, but neither of them were going to be the First Minister. Edmund Poots has said that he was going to lead the party, but would not be the First Minister, so would not take over Arlene Foster's job. And Geoffrey, of course, couldn't do it because he was in the House of Commons, and he would. Now, yesterday, and it was obviously to win over the six doubters, at least if the intelligence is correct, they say there are six people in everyone else is kind of meant to have been lined up, but to win over some of those six, he said that he would resign his seat in Westminster prior to the Assembly elections, which are due next year, if that sticks to its present timescale, and that he would be First Minister. Now, I think that is to deal with the situation where it seems to me incredibly odd that the leader of the party would not be the First Minister. And to be honest, it would probably be better if the leader of the party was the First Minister, because how do you deal? There's a fella called Paul Given, who I know nothing about, apparently would probably be the First Minister if Edmund Poots got in. So that would be a strange position.
It certainly would. Bertie, just stay with us because I want to bring in Sam McBride to tell us what's happening, political editor with the Belfast Newsletter. Good morning, Sam. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Where's this election headed, do you think?
I'm afraid it's not clear. I've been speaking to people in the DUP all week, really, and I think what Bertie Ahern has laid out there is a pretty fine analysis of where things sit. It's not entirely clear, mainly because it's been such a very opaque process. I mean, this party, as has been said, has no precedent for this on which to fall back. And really, the instincts of the DUP are very much towards centralisation, towards secrecy, towards keeping things in-house if they can possibly do that. That's where they've gone on this. But I think the really interesting thing is that over the last couple of days, we have seen this real flurry of activity from Sir Geoffrey Donaldson's camp, saying things that do not fit with the image that he was cultivating as the moderate candidate, and briefing from his camp that he would walk out of Stormont or he would do something that would force Sinn Féin to walk out of Stormont. I do not think he would be doing that if he thought he was sailing to victory here. There is a sense that this is potentially going to be quite close. Those six individuals, I think, will be key. And I think right up until 4 o'clock today, when the ballots are closed, that is the point, I think, at which it will become clear. Because right now, even within the DUP, there is not the sort of confidence from both camps that there was earlier in the week.
Okay, I want to talk to you both about the Northern Ireland Protocol. One of the big issues here is outlined by Bertie Ahern. What are you hearing on this, Sam? Because I see the Irish Times reporting today that David Frost is saying that the protocol is not sustainable for long the way it's currently operated.
Yes, well, that's something which Lord Frost said earlier in the week. He was over in Belfast. He met with a range of people, including, as some people will find bizarre, loyalist paramilitary groups under the guise of the Loyalist Communities Council. But there very much is a sense that when it comes to both Edwin Poots and Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, they are not the hardliners on this that some people might perceive them to be. Edwin Poots allowed his civil servants to build the Irish sea border. They operate the Irish sea border to this day. He has talked very tough He hasn't acted very tough. And so therefore, is he going to be the guy who comes in and tears everything up and walks out? I really don't think very many people believe that is likely. Likewise, Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, who is slightly more moderate than him, I think he's even less likely to do that. So there is very much a sense here that these people are playing to the electorate. That is the internal DUP electorate, some people who are quite hard-line backbenchers. That's who they're trying to win over at this point. It doesn't really tell us very much about where they're going to go. But what is key is that they're being forced to be tougher on this because of the practical implications of the protocol. Yeah. Our front page today is reporting that cancer treatment, which has been approved for use in Great Britain, is not coming to Northern Ireland because of the protocol. Those are the sorts of issues that are really causing people to be angry about
this. It's such an existential issue, though, Bertie Ahern, that if they don't hold the line that they, the promises that they've made in this short campaign, that they won't be in that job for long, whoever wins.
Well, I think, you know, elections are elections and then you have to implement it. But it's very, the issues are fairly stark. I mean, the big problem with the protocol is that the person who negotiated the protocol, well, the two people negotiated, the British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, and David Frost, who was the front man with Barnier, you know, both of them keep on pulling back from this. Now, I don't think the protocol is going to be abolished or anything, but there clearly is pressure all the time on Marcus Sefcovic to make amendments. And I have long felt that it wasn't just about the Northern Ireland protocol. It was an effort by the British government to get concessions in other areas, and they'll keep up this pressure. Now, there are technical things within the protocol on animal health and health areas that should be possible to resolve. So I think whoever is the leader of DUP by tea time this evening, I think would probably be able to say that they've got amendments to the protocol and that things have changed. So I don't think it's an issue about abolishing it. It's about getting whatever Marcus Sefcovic and David Frost negotiate.
I see the Irish Times saying that Boris Johnson at this meeting with Micheál Martin today will seek to persuade him to convince the EU to accept a system of equivalent standards on animal health rather than full alignment. But Ireland is not permitted to have those sorts of conversations officially, is it?
No. And I've no doubt that the Taoiseach will take the position today that, as has happened from the outset, that the any changes to the withdrawal agreement, which includes the protocol, is a matter for Marcus Sefcovic, and that that's where those negotiations have to take place. I mean, the difficulties I think we have with unionism and the Irish government have with unionism and people generally, I think, is to convince them that this is not a constitutional grab. I mean, I don't really care what Marcus Sefcovic agrees about the earth on the plants coming in, whether the plants have to be wrapped or unwrapped or that. Like, they can change all these technical things and make it sensible. But the crucial point here, and it's why the Taoiseach can't go near this issue, in my view, is because this is the integrity of the single market. This is the business of the 27 countries. And it's the integrity of the internal market and the single market which is at stake. And that is a matter for the EU negotiators. And we, of course, are supportive of the EU line, but we've no power and we shouldn't get into the game of letting on we can change these things.
On that meeting today, we hear that the Ballymurphy inquest verdict and the British response to that will be on the agenda as well. What do you expect that the outcome and impact of all of that will be?
I think, Claire, it's important, I suppose. I mean, everybody down here and I think in the North has been aware of the Ballymurphy case for decades and decades and decades. And many of those families came down here, down south, after those terrible nights and in the second week of August in 1971. I think it was an expectation that the Prime Minister had made the statement in the House and that caused a ruffle. But anyway, I think, you know, because that was because Blair and Cameron had done that previously. But I think, listen, hopefully the Ballymurphy people have won. We shouldn't distract because of how it was handled, I think. But the big issue is going to be about the legacy. I've no doubt doubt that the discussions today will move in Ballymurphy very quickly in maybe holding the hand out to the families in a better way than happened this week. But I think the big issue is the Storm the House agreement and the desire of the British to move to legislate, as per the Queen's speech the other day, to some new way of handling the legacy issues. And that is fraught with a huge amount of problems, because I readily accept that if the Stormont House agreement was as good as everyone said it was, why hasn't it been implemented 7 years on? Mm-hmm. But the other side of it is that the Stormont House agreement very clearly set out what the central issues were: promoting reconciliation, upholding the rule of law, acknowledging and addressing the suffering of victims and survivors, facilitating the pursuit of justice and information. Particularly and importantly is following the human rights issues and compliance. So these are all the issues of the Stormont House Agreement. And I think to change any of those things, Claire, the Stormont House Agreement was between the two governments and all the parties in the North, supported by all the parties in the South. So I'm not saying that it's perfect, but any bilateral action by the British will not produce good outcomes for anyone. And if there are difficulties, and if the British government clearly have difficulties mm-hmm. with Stormont House, they should come back and talk and seek improvements, but not to do anything unilateral. That will just be a mess.
Former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern and Sam McBride, political editor of the Belfast Newsletter, thank you both for joining us. And that result of the DUP election of a new leader should be known by about 4 or 5 o'clock today. Let's take a break.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.